the record.
The committee is there. The committee is in order.
Well, I'm not.
I know. I recognize that. Today, what we'd like to do is achieve several objectives. And what I want to start out by saying is that we would like to complete discussion on the population prioritization. And before leaving today, the objective is to have a prioritized list of the populations in draft form. We'd like to begin discussion on the benefit prioritization. Prioritizing populations and benefits will allow staff to price a variety of models and allow the committee to review a number of possible options. Also, at this time, I'd like to announce that the committee is scheduled to meet tomorrow, Thursday, May 22nd, from 4 to 6 p.m. The committee is also scheduled to meet next week, Wednesday and Thursday, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., and also Saturday, 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. So, with that, I guess we need to commence our staff. Mike, are you willing to do the presentation for us today and the complete discussion on the population prioritizations?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Mike Bonetto, policy analyst for the Senate Republican Office, and just wanted to follow up where we left off on Monday with our population prioritization. I have up here the get the lights down. The
Can
first
we just dim the lights
they
a little
turn
bit.
Turn the lights down, please.
Turn them down low.
Okay, Mike.
The first sheet that we have up was the first one that we had up on Monday, and this was just the overview that provided a breakdown of the number of people in each category based on specific federal poverty level increments. That's where we started on Monday. We ended with what we termed Connie's plan, and this added a lot of confusion to the room that we learned about. We've since learned from this, and we've made some modifications. We learned that we had too many colors up here, and we also learned that we had too many letters up here. I think some of people were thinking that we were trying to design some sort of OHP fight song. So we have since redesigned this and now have put together a plan that has incorporated a number of the requests from some committee members. So we can take you through this kind of step by step. The green shaded area still is the mandatory population, and below here we talk about the mandatory at a 60-40 match. In all of these specific mandatory categories. What we have done after that is broken this down into the specific optional populations in a priority. Now, given this is our priority at this point in time, it was just a priority that we wanted to put out there that will be based for discussion on today. So, for example, following this key, the optional in the orange is a 72-28 match. This is this area. This is the CHIP population. These are kids 0 to 5 and 6 to 18, above 133 all the way up to 225, and above 100 up to 225. So for our first priority, what we have prioritized number one on this scenario, are pregnant women, children 0 to 5, children 6 to 18, from the mandatory level up to 200% of the federal poverty level. We are currently covering this population, these populations here, at 185%. This would be a shift from what we are currently doing. But this is also in line with what the co-chairs have presented in their budget. They have taken these populations up to 200%. So again, if we were prioritizing the first dollar in, would go to cover all of these populations. After that, we would then go down and cover adults, couples, and families up to 25% of the federal poverty level. And in your attached sheet, the second sheet behind your graph shows a more detailed analysis of each of the populations that are up here right now. And I think the interesting thing to note on this adults, couples, and families from 0 to 25%, that nearly 50% of all eligible adults below 100% fall into this category.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Would you please make that statement again?
Of all of the eligible adults below 100%,
right,
nearly 50% are within this category, 0 to 25%.
That's exactly what I thought you said.
Continuing on, the third priority would be adults and couples from 26 to 50%. The fourth piece would be bringing in the medically needy, which again has still not specifically been defined. We have a current program in place, but there has been some talk of redesigning this based on eligibility and benefit level. Fifth piece would be adults and couples from 51% to 75%. Sixth would be adults and couples from 76% to 100%. And the last population to be bought back would be pregnant women and children from 200% to 225%.
Let me ask you there, Mike, if based upon your new figure that you've brought into us, the green we understand is mandatory. That's Medicaid participation right now. What above that or differently do we have to get waivers on? Is it the entire package? Is it only a portion of it? And the reason I'm asking is that part of your budget calculation that was discussed indicates a three-month window of waiver versus a six-month window of waiver. And so I'm trying to identify with the waiver process how much of that would be subject to the waiver.
Mr. Chair, we are going under the assumption that almost anything that we do is going to be based on some sort of amendment to the waiver. Because all the pricing that we have looked up until this point is basically taking this population and redefining the prioritized list. And that in and of itself is going to require us to get a waiver amendment.
And does this number in the green reflect the six-month waiver or the three-month waiver?
This just reflects the populations to be covered, does not reflect anything based on costs. But we do have those scenarios laid out when we are ready to get there.
Okay, so when we get there, we can discuss
exactly
those things.
Exactly.
Okay. Are there further questions? Senator Fisher.
What happens to medical needy in this scenario?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, the way we have designed this, that the medically needy would come in after adults and couples have been filled up to 50% of the FPL. Once those populations, 1, 2, and 3, have been filled, then we would look at covering people in the medically in a medically needy program.
Question on that.
Senator Carter.
Help me. Again, Mike, are we talking... So, these are mandated people. So before you go to any expanded version of this, you're saying the medically needy will be taken in consideration. Before we go to between 185 and 200% of poverty level, you will consider the medically needy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, if I understand you correctly, you are saying before we cover the medically needy, we will first be covering adults and couples up to 50% of the federal poverty level.
Yes.
That is correct.
Okay. Representative Bates?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. What is the criteria for deciding to go to what you count as 2 and 3, and part of 1 before you went to medically needy? The concern I have here is that medically needy is a group of people who literally will die. A group of them will die if we don't cover them, a certain amount of their pharmaceuticals primarily. And we've already seen the effect of that. These other people will not have as good access. They still can go to hospital. There's still some risk for them. But the medically needy, depending on how you define that population, is at much greater risk from my point of view. Give me some idea of what you were thinking, what your criteria was. Was it because you hadn't had a chance to define that program completely yet? Give me some more detail on it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I think the premise that we were going on, based on the current medically needy of how it was designed, that we had around, out of the 8,700 that were in the program, around 7,500 were in Medicare. So they had an existing benefit package to begin with, and we were just adding on a prescription package in addition to that. So by covering these people first who had absolutely nothing, we thought that would be in a higher priority.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
My concern is the people medically needy have been defined by their need. Those have been defined by their income level, not by their need. I will realize most of those people have Medicare, but the key for them is buying extremely expensive pharmaceutical benefits that they can't possibly afford, which if they don't get them, are life-threatening, and we've seen the results of that already. So again, I'll go back, and I'm not trying to give you a hard time, because these are difficult things to do to try to prioritize people this way. It's almost inhuman to do, but I still don't follow the criteria used for making the decision to make them number 4 instead of number 2.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, and this kind of goes back to what Dr. Goldberg had presented on Monday when he was breaking down these populations. When he was breaking down the OHP standard population, he brought out some numbers of basically how many HIV and how many other critical medical cases we had in this population that basically would be the same over in this area as well. So if you cut them here, I mean, you can still consider that you are cutting people out of life-saving medications.
Yeah. One last question, Mr. Chair, if you would know.
Yes.
I would suggest that the needs of the people in 4 are equivalent to the needs in 2. And just as you've made 3 of those columns a 1, you might make those a 2 also. I'm very concerned about that small population, which we now know is more like 3,000, that may need to be as high a priority as what you've numbered as 2 there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Senator Fisher.
Who's coming up with these priorities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, these were just a scenario to present to you so you could actually work and change these numbers how you felt that the prioritization that you feel is necessary. This was just to kind of initiate some of the discussion. This is not to say that this is the plan by any means. That's not what we're saying at all.
You were so positive in your presentation that you almost overwhelmed me. But I was very interested in what Dr. Bates had to say and his reasoning there, because I follow some of that same reasoning.
Senator Carter.
Just to add to when they first came to make their presentation, it was just to give us, they did clarify, say it was just to give us some ideas and some suggestions about conversation about how we want to do it and that kind of stuff. I think probably we might have forgotten, but that's all they were doing this for.
This is an attempt today by Mike to try to simplify an issue that became very confusing the other day to the committee. And we looked at all the different colored boxes and the different alphabet soup that was up there. And so we actually asked Mike Benetto to go back and develop this in a little bit more layman's terms so we could understand the numerical sequence and to respond to the good representative Bates and Senator Fisher is that none of this is cast in concrete. These are only for discussion purposes up here on the board, and then it'll be up to the committee to narrow the focus of discussion down and try to narrow some of the finality down to take back to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, one more.
Senator Fisher?
Yeah, just to clarify, thank you, Mr. Chair. Where did our column people go all of a sudden? They have vanished as quickly as they appeared the other day.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, you are correct. We did decide to take the Calum section off because in the pregnant women category, that component does get incorporated. That is a benefit that goes with pregnant women. The benefit package is different, and we didn't want to add on another confusing segment at this point in time. We wanted to keep it as simple as possible and deal with these specific categories. And if Calum above 133% fell into pregnant women, we thought that that would just be a better starting point.
Okay, further questions? Senator Courtney.
Well, let me understand some. If we had unlimited resources, we don't have to do any prioritizing. Right? We can do it all. But that's not where we're at.
That's right.
So we're going to have to prioritize. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
Correct.
So it's
correct.
Coming. And I don't know. I know it may be inhuman, Doctor. But if that's not what we're going to do, then I guess we're going to do either we're going to either give somebody else the responsibility to do it, or we're going to come up with the resources so we can do all those, whatever this green, blue, and orange is. So I mean, is that right or wrong? I want to understand from those of you who've been in this business a long time, is it that simple or not in terms of where we're at right now?
It's not simple, but that's pretty accurate reflection of what we are going to have to do at some point is prioritize the population to be included. And if I can go back and take the liberty to share with you a situation that happened about four meeting rooms down in 1981. Then Senate President Kitzhaber and the emergency board sat there and looked in the face of Colby Howard and his mother and grandmother and said, yep, we're going to deny services for you because to give you services for your child would deny access or services to many other people.
Sure.
And that's what precipitated this health plan.
Sure.
So it comes down to the Solomon of Wisdom trying to choose which half of the baby you wish. And be it simplified in my explanation, that's about as simplified as I can give it to you. Is there further questions? Mike, if you want to continue, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I just want to respond also to Representative Bates' comments, and it leads into the next sheet, which has to do with the more detailed explanation. And when we were drafting this plan, it was taking a lot of some of the policy discussion that had already taken place and also looking at some of the budgets and looking at how the co-chairs had made their prioritization. And part of where the medically needy fell into our priority was how the co-chairs have covered them and have not covered others. And again, getting back to this population, adults, couples, and families, 0 to 25%, knowing that we have a very high number of high medical needs in that area, drove that policy decision.
Are there any questions on this graph as you take a look at these numbers and isolate these discussion points?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Carter,
I think it's I think that we cannot get around looking at very succinctly the issue that the doctor did present, and that are we going to base our policy decisions on income, or is it going to be on need? And I think that that's something we need to speak to a little more extensively and not leave it. And if we make the decision, that's fine. And back to your point, I happen to be here in 81 and saw the Colby Howard situation, and I know what that is all about. And I just think that it is important that that is a policy decision, that it appears to me that as we go along, it seemed to be a little more expedient to make it as we go than to wait 3 meetings from now and have to come back to it. And you know, so I it appears to me that I would be saying I want a combination of it, and a combination of it would mean that some judgment call would have to be made in terms of does this need fall within the categories of the 4, or does this need fall within the categories of the 1 based upon that particular issue at the time in which the department is having to deal with it. But it appears to me that somewhere along the line we've got to make that decision. Thank you.
I think what Mr. Bonetto is trying to suggest to the committee is that he has given a form of a discussion that we had this morning with Senator President Courtney.
Absolutely.
And Senator Winters and myself, and we asked him to actually design an umbrella. We know approximately what the dollar value is. Now we need to define who's going to be under the umbrella and who's not going to be under the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an attempt not to draw a line and exclude anyone. This is an attempt to try to define how many people can we get under the umbrella,
right,
and still keep them dry.
Exactly.
And so that's what this is an attempt for, and I think Mike wanted us to have the discussion and dialogue today to move in a direction so that he can go back and start pricing, and he and Ms. Seeley can come back to the committee and say, based upon your prioritizations, these are the options available to you, and this is how much you have as wiggle room within the projected amount of money that's available, and then we present that to the Ways and Means Subcommittee to do the budgeting based upon what our prioritization discussions lead us to. Now, if I am wrong, Senator Winters, you step in and correct.
Senator Hannon, you're absolutely correct. We asked for a broader rather than micromanaging, looking at that. We know that we only have a finite amount of dollars, and underneath that tent, what could we put inside of it? So we know that we have the mandatory population, and we know that we assume that above that, what can we do with prioritization 1, and then adding in blocks with 2, but not to say that medically needy was not needed.
Right. No, Madam Chair and Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I totally understand. I'm totally there making further comments in terms of that issue itself. And I'm clear about why they are here, and I think that that is really, really great. And it's just that longevity and the ability to articulate came out much better than what I said. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, if you want to continue, Mike.
At this point, I think I'd like to be able to have the committee initiate some dialogue on how they would go about prioritizing, and I would just have a question first for Representative Bates, and it would help us certainly kind of have a better understanding. As you point out, medically needy being ranked number 4, and that might be too low on the scale, too high on the scale, where does that fall, or where should that fall?
Mr. Chair, do you want me to take part in this conversation?
Representative Bates, I would certainly hope that you and Representative Cruz both feel comfortable in participating in our discussion here this afternoon. My instructions from the Senate President was to try to move us along towards a decision of some sort so that we can direct staff to go back and formulate some numbers. So I would hope that everyone at this committee table feels comfortable in participating in that discussion.
Thank you.
So, Representative Bates.
First, I would commend both of you for doing the best spreadsheet or population I've seen in the last 5 months. A nice job. This is very understandable, and it allows us to make some reasonable decisions, and I appreciate that. And I also appreciate that you did not mean, well, your numbers here, to do any more than give us some guidance, and then we can make our own decisions, and it will be the wisdom of this group that makes that decision, hopefully. Having said that, I mean, I really do appreciate that. You've done a wonderful job. I don't really disagree with much of what you've done here. I think you've done a good job. The only concern I have is the one I pointed out. I would follow pretty well your guidelines, with the exception that what you have listed is number 2. For adults, couples, and families at the very low poverty level, most of them are there because they have significant medical problems. You wisely said that should probably be pretty high priority, number 2. The medically needy have a special problem in that while they do have Medicare coverage for their needs, their greatest need are pharmaceuticals that we can't get any other way other than paying the discounted price for. We can't say to them this is going to be a cost shift to the rest of the system anyway. They either get it or they don't get it. And I think defining that group very carefully, if you could go back and define that carefully from the 8,000 or 9,000, we know that number is smaller now. It's about 3,000, I think, or 4,000. You could define that and price that for us. I would suggest that become priority number 2, along with those people below that 25% poverty level. And I would really not have much argument with the rest of what you've done here. I think you've done a pretty careful job of doing this, and I commend you for making something that's very difficult for people to grasp, fairly reasonable to grasp, and make some broad priority judgments here.
Now that we've opened it up for discussion, Senator Brown, would you like to make some comments, please?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. I guess for me, I would have concerns like Dr. Bates did in terms of the adult couples and families and the medically needy. I would probably put need at 3 or 5 level as opposed to, well, at 3 level before, and then put the second spot there at 4. I guess for me what's important is a lot of what will be in the package that is offered these families that will help me determine where I'm at. But I, other than that, I think these guys did a great job and I feel very comfortable with the proposal.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Senator Carter.
Thank you. Okay. You're saying that medically needy become number 2, and what did you propose putting in the number 4 spot?
I actually would put medically needy at 2, and the adult families and couples is 3 and 4, but that just sort of depends upon the package that's available to them. For example, the families that I've worked with in juvenile court are going to need drug and alcohol treatment in order to be reimbursed for their children. So that's going to be important for me to see in this column. Mm-hmm. So,
Representative Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair. I guess I would wonder if we can create discrete populations inside medically needy, and because I think there are some in that population that have a higher level of need and a more acute level of need, and so it may be beneficial to define some discrete populations because there may be a different priority level there. I mean, it, you know, the HIV folks, heart transplant people and stuff like that clearly need to be at a very high level. Some of the others may actually need more things like case management on the front end of this. So it'd be nice to kind of see if we can get discrete populations in that group.
Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. One of the reasons that that the medically needy is standing out there, if you notice, not within a box, is that the definition or defined some of the issues that Representative Cruz and others have raised, that until you do that kind of analysis, it kind of stays out there. We know that there may be other places in which that population will show up in A&D, for example. The same is true when we look at pharmaceuticals. Is there a way, for example, that part of that population can be combined with the senior drug program? So that definition, that still has to be fleshed out. And so it sits there because the definement has with it.
Senator Carter?
Mr. Chairman, may I please ask Dr. Goldberg a question?
Yes, please. Dr. Goldberg, would you come up, please?
Dr. Goldberg, can you, as of yesterday, give us a profile of the people in the medically needy category? Because if we're going to try to categorize, Mr. Chairman, it appears to me we need to know the varying degrees within that category.
For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Administrator of the Office of Health Policy. Senator Hannon, Senator Carter, the medically needy program actually, as it is today, is somewhere around 400 individuals. A little over 200 individuals, 250 individuals who have HIV, and a little over 100 who have transplants and are taking rejection medications. 6 months ago, this question actually came up on Monday, and I was asked about the medical diagnoses amongst the medically needy population. I've looked into that. It's very difficult to get diagnostic information because we don't pay medical claims for those in medically needy. We only pay primarily for their drugs. What I did do, and what I've passed on to Marjorie, is actually a list of the medications that were prescribed for these individuals. I don't have that in front of me, but I can give you a bit of a synopsis off the top of my head. When we looked at the medication claims, the drugs that were given, the top category, both by price and by numbers of prescriptions, were mental health drugs. So that was number one. I believe that number two was narcotic pain medicines. That was also both by price, by dollars spent, as well as by numbers of prescriptions. After that, it sort of broke down a little bit. About 5% of individuals in the medically needy program got prescriptions for diabetic medicines. So one could assume that about 5% were diabetics. About 5% had asthma or lung disease. Probably about 3 or 4% had asthma. There were the HIV medications were about fourth or fifth based on price, but obviously they're very expensive medications, so they covered far fewer people. And you've got that. I don't have that list in front of me. I don't know if Marjorie does.
Actually, Senator Carter, that's what I just...
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd be happy to walk through that in greater detail if you wanted.
Mr. Chairman, I think that if we are going to change the category, change 4 to 2, and I think wisdom has certainly prevailed in the suggestions that these gentlemen brought to us in terms of defining. And back to the co-chair's
comments that if we're going to have medically needy, then for the sake of not only a waiver, but for the sake of policy, how do we categorize within that category so that we can make a policy decision? That would appear to me, to be the issue. For me, it would be the issue.
That's what Senator Winters, I think, was trying
right,
to
exactly.
identify and address, is that within that category of medically needy, we can define based upon Dr. Goldberg's recent explanation here that there may be a definition or way of addressing some of those things that gets at the critical, most critical that Dr. Bates referred to. And I think that's where everyone pretty much agrees with his assessment on this, that we want to make sure that those people are somehow not lost through a crack or non-avoidance somehow. Dr. Goldberg.
Senator Hannon, I think that that's certainly, those are good policy decisions. The one piece of information that I think you will need, and I will bring back to you because I don't have the answer today, is whether or not we can actually do that
right.
under the federal rules for the medically needy program. There are some very clear rules about who can be covered. Part of it is about medical spend down. I'm not positive that you can, within that category, cover some individuals with certain medical conditions and not others who may have a similar spend down. I will check on that.
Let me ask you this. As you research this, would you also research the fact if we could amend our waiver process, if we're going to go through this waiver process, if we can ask for such a waiver that would allow the state to define within that subcategory the most critical of the medically needy without violating the federal rules and guidelines?
Senator Hannon, I'll do that. I'll also point out that what you're dealing with, I think, is one of the most difficult questions around health policy as it relates to sort of Medicaid guidelines. What you're talking about, I believe the committee's talking about, is about trying to get benefits and dollars to those that have the greatest medical need.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to prioritize, you want to prioritize benefit to those who are the sickest, who have illnesses that are most amenable to treatment. The medically needy program is a spend down program where people with all kinds of illnesses spend down. The standard population, as we've known it, they actually have a similar array of illnesses. There are people with HIV disease and transplants and chronic lung disease and diabetes. We don't cover them based on their medical need down in the standard population. It's actually based on poverty level. So on one hand, we have a group who we're delineating based on actual poverty, some of whom have tremendous medical need and some of whom have more social need than medical need. In the medically needy program, we have individuals who are actually living above poverty, have incomes above poverty, who have an array of illnesses that would cause them to spend down. And I think it's finding the balance there, which is going to be the challenge, and I'll look into some of the rules and legalities of doing that.
Yeah, Representative Cruz.
Yeah, I guess I'd just suggest that since the medically needy program is a separate and distinct Medicaid funding stream, that the waiver request that we develop needs to be a separate and distinct waiver request. We need to make sure that we're not sinking one ship by...
We don't want to jeopardize the integrity of the overall program for one element.
Right. I mean, when we're dealing with separate and distinct funding streams, if we're looking for flexibility, that we need to make sure that request is separate from the general waiver request. Okay.
Further questions or comments? Connie?
Chair Hannon, I just, for the record and to be clear, when we're talking about the medically needy program, staff is assuming we're talking about the medically needy program prior to 01-03, not the current program.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Is there further discussion? Mike, what would you suggest that we move on to now? That we prioritize the list of the populations by number-wise with the modification that was substituted here. We move number 4 up to number 2 and move 2 and 3 down to 3 and 4.
Mr. Chair, if that's a consensus of the committee, that would be fine.
Does this appear to be the consensus that the committee direction is going?
I think so. I would like to.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think that's fine with the understanding that that population hasn't totally been defined, and we may have to take another look once that those definitions have occurred.
Okay.
And I think with caveat, sure. I think it's fine.
Yes.
All right. Senator Carter, did you have some comments?
No, I was going to say I like that.
Okay. All right. Then I would suggest, Mike and Connie, that we start with that list, that prioritization that the committee has discussed. And is there any other changes or suggestions to this prioritization list that the committee would suggest? Is everyone happy with these suggestions? I assume you are, because you're not raising any issues.
Mr. Chair.
Senator President Courtney, did you have a comment?
No, I'm just...
I see that wily smile of yours.
That's not a wily smile, that's a silly smile.
No, it's a wily smile. He's a rabbit.
No, I'm okay, I think. I better be. All right.
Okay. I can get by with saying it. I'm co-equal with him.
The rest of us can't call him a Wascally Wabbit?
Wascally Wabbit.
Okay.
All right. Is there any further discussions on this?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Bonetto.
As I'm looking at this and we're trying to get a better handle on how we're going to price this, can we just get maybe a little bit more clarification on the medically needy?
Senator Winters, would you like to clarify the definition of medically needy so Mr. Bonetto can actually begin to go back to the pricing board and start to price this?
Well, part of the discussion is how much inside of, what's inside of the medically needy. I think we need that definition of who's there before you can start pricing. You know, we mentioned HIV diabetics. How much of it is that we can actually do under prescription? What really are we talking about when we're just talking about medically needy? I don't think that that's clear, but I do think that we need to know what and for how much. And that's what I meant about defining. Dr. Goldberg mentioned some of the categories when he talked about what the HIV population, how many, the rejection of drugs, how many, so that we have some sense of what's inside of the medically needy category.
Senator Winters, I think one of the issues is that, you know, we had about 8,700 people in the medically needy program. It's an issue not only of how you define the, or whether we can even define medical condition. There's also issues about how one defines spend down, and whether or not how that spend down gets calculated, whether that's monthly, 3 months, 6 months expenses, can actually change the numbers of people who would qualify. So it's not as straightforward as the standard population, where it's a percentage of federal poverty. The medically needy program could get the spend down could get structured in such a way that there were differences in order of magnitude of 2,000 to 3,000 to 4,000 individuals who would qualify, and I think that's one of the pricing challenges that Connie and Mike were alluding to.
And Mr. Chair, that's the reason that we wanted to set the defined population here, while you're working on both the calculations, the types that are inside. I think until we have that kind of information, you can't make a definitive decision, policy decision, on the medical needy. Does that make sense,
Chairman? Just a moment. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Defining this population is going to be difficult, not almost, you know, they have medical need. Whether HIV or transplants, they obviously do. But you don't want to be in a situation where you have a transplant patient who has $10 million in the bank and can easily afford the drugs or buy the drugs for them, nor do you want to deny somebody their medications and allow them to die. I would suggest possibly you might use a cutoff that you've used for the first categories of 200%. You find, you know, your ones as children and pregnant women at 200% of poverty level to receive their benefits. You might want to consider that as the same cutoff for this group too. If their spend down occurs at that level before they get benefit. You might also, because some of these drugs can cost thousands of dollars a month, may want to put a time criteria on that of 60 days. So you have some idea of what that cost is rolling out for those people, and 60 days is probably something that's at least in the ballpark. Then you can look what kind of a population you have left. So 200%, 60 days, you can't get to the medical condition, but you know we've got a medically needy patient there. We're not buying medications just to take care of someone's acne. We're taking care of whether they live or die. And I think under those conditions, you might have some parameters that might help you define that population. Mike, you agree with that assessment? Is it something you could work with?
It's pretty hard. We might be able to do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I just want to get a better handle on this. You're saying a spend down level to 200% when currently we are averaging a spend down at 58%.
Mr. Chair, yes. And the reason being is the criteria we've already used, and we know the federal poverty levels are low enough that these people won't be able to make their rent. They won't be able to buy their food if they're not at a reasonable poverty level. Now, I don't know what the federal requirements are for that. That might be too high. But you want a reasonable figure. And if the reasonable figure for the other groups is 200%, you might want to consider that as a marker, a benchmark for this one also. I'm just offering it for your consideration. I'm not saying that's where you absolutely should go. It's a consideration.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, and this is one thing that Dr. Goldberg had alluded to. The difficult piece with the spend down component is that you can manipulate that formula, that income criteria, so it doesn't. That it really is just an arbitrary number of how you set that, and that's what we're still trying to get a better handle on right now.
Mr. Chair, follow.
Yes.
You might also want to consider an assets test in that too, because you're running the same problems there again. You want people who truly have medical need and financial need to be in the program, and so you probably have to have asset, spend down, and time.
Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, just to kind of move us along a little bit, I think, and certainly these kinds of questions that pose are excellent, that staff will need, but we need the staff to go back and just flesh out this particular category. I think we need to move on and look at if we're all in agreement of of including the medically needy at one with the adults and couples 2, 3, and 4, which then staff can then begin pricing or begin really fleshing out the medically needy category.
Senator Carter?
Mr. Chairman, I recognize the intelligence on this committee and realize that I'm probably the most deficit on here, so I need a little help, okay?
We all do.
But what I'm trying to understand and come to grips with is that how can we make this decision, even though I support the direction which we're going, how can we make this decision until we can make the decision, the policy decision, in terms of whether we're going to look at population versus need? Because even within the medically needy, you're talking about a certain population group, and when we start talking about the asset test, looking at the acuity and all those kind of issues, you're still talking about a certain population, and it would appear to me that. Some of these people in the medically needy group would still be a part of a certain population, and if we're going to use need, then that's going to kind of change what we do with adult couples and families and that kind of stuff. I'm just, help me with that, Doc. You know, maybe somebody can help me.
I think I understand what you're question is, but I think what Mr. Bonetto has been asking from us is he wants a roadmap today to try to narrow these definitions down on population. And so I think the first order is, when you say need, are you speaking about the medically needy versus a child, or are you talking about somebody else's need? Are you trying to look at the global picture or isolate it down to a more definitive need? I guess that's a question I'd have to ask of you. What are you intending in the discussion?
For me, Mr. Chairman, I think if we look at population and not actual dollars, because when we talk about medically needy, we're talking about dollars. People who are living above the poverty level, but they have needs based upon the cost of the medication in which they have to have. And so therefore they have to spend down to a certain amount of dollars that they have in order to qualify. But when you talk about population, you're talking about all of the above, because most of them are at least at starting at about 50% of poverty level and go up to 200%, and then if there's money left, go to 225%. So if we're talking about general population, we're going to hit needs, but we're not necessarily talking about real needs compared to the larger population needs if we're talking about medically needy. So, go on. I'll try to get this satisfied someplace else.
Senator Fisher?
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's my understanding that dealing with pregnant women, children, issues, and others, we're not looking at any asset tests. It's strictly an income.
Mr. Bonetto?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, no, we do look at assets. I mean, they have the same eligibility criteria as others. And the asset test is $2,000.
Excluding home,
cars, I believe.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
So there is an asset test for those population.
It's minus, so...
So,
Mr. Chair,
yes, Senator Fisher.
Yeah.
Liquid assets.
So we're not talking about them having other properties and other ownership of all kinds of stuff other than strictly their dwelling?
Correct.
So why would we judge the medically needy any differently then? Or why would we not judge them the same?
Senator Winters?
Under the medically needy, what the issue is that the cost, the medical cost, is so great, much greater for this population because we're talking about individuals that, let's say that they did have an asset, their medical expenses, when you overlay that, that's what's called, that's why you're talking, they have to spend down that amount in order to become eligible for what services that we provide them. Mm-hmm. And it's the driver is the medical cost, unlike the other population group where that's not the driver.
Mr. Chair, I understand that aspect of it, but when you start saying then they ought to be judged by assets, that means that we're not just giving them the same, that we're only looking at their income.
Mr. Chair?
Senator, let's try to get some clarification. Doctor, do you use a definition of assets versus spend down? I think the senator is asking a comparison of two different issues here. Mm-hmm. Assets and spending down are two different items. Could you define that maybe for us in this discussion?
Assets, my understanding is someone's assets would be the amount of property, money in the bank, their financial and material assets. The spend down, I believe, is calculated against their income, and it's a spend down on what their income is, not tested against the totality of their assets. I'm saying that, however, with great qualification, and what I think would be best is that we come back with some clear information so that rather than speaking from some conjecture, we can talk with some clear fact and information.
Okay. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may not have made myself clear when I asked or suggested assets to Mike. Mike asked for some parameters, some idea of what kind of definition we want for medically needy. And what I threw there was three things out. One, the length of time for the spend down to occur, what the spend down went down to, and the third thing being assets, and that we don't want to be in a position to have one of these situations where someone has a home and a car and spend down, but also has, you know, $5 million in bonds in the bank, and we're buying the medications for them. I think that's what you're trying to get to also.
That was...
I failed to make myself clear there, and I apologize for that. There's an asset test for the rest of this population, which is a reasonable one, I think. And I think Mike probably, with a little research, looking at federal law, as far as the medically needy program, come up with some reasonable asset tests for us. And I failed to make myself clear on that. I apologize. Mike, and if you didn't understand me, Mike, I apologize to you, too.
Now,
Senator Fisher, does that...
Well, it does, and I was thinking of the idea that a guy had a couple of oil wells, and they only produce 2 barrels a day, but they're good for 1,000 years. They're pretty good assets.
Pretty good assets.
But you could spend down pretty fast. Actual income, and I can't see allowing something like that to go on, and somebody that's strapped already trying to pay for helping them get drugs when they got could sell that and maybe take care of themselves for their lifetime and forget the last 900 years.
Could we maybe move this discussion along here and try to focus again back on the issue of, we have kind of set our prioritization based upon this sheet, and we have items 1, and we've moved item 2 down to item 4. We've moved item 4 up to item 2, and moved item 2 down to 3 and 4. Is that correct?
Huh?
Margie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that 1 is still 1. 4.
1 is still 1.
1 is still 1. 4 is now 2.
Right.
2 is now 3.
Right.
And 3 is now 4.
Okay. Senator Winters?
I'm going to move that we accept that population prioritization order. 1, and two with the medically needy, and three becomes adult couples and families, four is adult couples and families, and then five adult couples and families, six adult couples and families, and seven pregnant women. And then with seven children, 0-5 above the 201, the 225 level.
You've heard Senator Winter's motion to accept that as a recommendation to Mr. Bonetto and Ms. Seeley so that they can go back and price this for us. Is there discussion? Is there objection to adopting that recommendation? Not, it's been so approved. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Bonetto.
Would the committee like a brief presentation, possibly tomorrow if we can do it, on the medically needy? Or not.
Senator President Courtney.
What's left on our agenda tonight?
And co-chair winner.
The next thing is the discussion on the costing.
What are we continuing on the agenda at this time?
Mr. Chair, could before we leave this committee, and I hate to keep going on and on about this, but I mean, Representative Bates had some interesting ideas, but I think the first cut of that ought to be to go back to the original program with the original rules and see what we can do with that, and once we've done that, then come in and see how we massage it. So.
Well, I think what we have done is adopt the population prioritization plan.
But for what comes back to this committee is if we can triage that population, I think we do it based on what currently exists under the current system, under the current...
Okay.
I mean, what we have now is allowable from CMS. What Representative Bates is suggesting may be some decision points that may require waiver approval. So,
what we'd like to do today is we have pretty well prioritized the population draft, and I'd like to give that to Mr. Bonetto and Ms. Seeley to cost those items out and return back to this committee. The next item I'd like to discuss today is the introduction to prioritization of benefits.
Senator Hannon, I think that would be me.
Okay.
On the agenda. And
see,
I didn't...
Does this have to do with medically needy?
No, this is actually an area, Senator Courtney, that I feel very comfortable with. I believe we're on firm footing here. What I'm going to walk through briefly to orient you to benefits is, and let's call it medical services rather than even benefits, is the array of medical benefits that you are going to have to prioritize. The first are mandatory services. And let me just clarify what I mean by mandatory services. If you actually turn your attention to the colored chart on the wall, the green population is the mandatory population, the category... Oh, I get a pointer. The green population is the categorically mandatory population, and this is a group that is required to receive a mandatory set of benefit services. Those services, in essence, include inpatient and outpatient hospital care, lab and X-ray, physician services, home health, psychiatric care for children under 21, vision and dental for children only, most durable medical equipment, and transportation. So that's the group of services that the mandatory population will have, and actually as well the CHIP population, the children in Brown, the two number one Browns, receive a mandatory benefit as well. And here in Oregon, we've also applied a mandatory benefit to the pregnant women because it clearly made sense to provide them with a hospital benefit. There are then a group of optional services. The optional services include prescription drugs, mental health, chemical dependency, vision, dental, and a variety of therapies. When you begin to make the decisions about prioritization of benefits, what you'll see is that the mandatory services immediately need to get paired with the population in green, as well as to the children. We'll then be in a position of dealing with optional services. The co-chair's budget has already included prescription drugs, mental health, and I believe chemical dependency in their pricing of the benefit package for the mandatory population. And indeed, providing those services really provides an appropriate and full benefit. Of course, it still doesn't cover, some things are still not covered within that benefit package. The biggest financial piece are prescription drugs, which are clearly the costliest piece of the benefit package. When you move out of the mandatory population and get to the optional population, in essence, what's now become numbers 3, 4, 5 and 6 in the blue, you will then be able to prioritize benefits in a manner that you feel meets the policy objectives of the state. So let me provide you with a couple of examples. You could start, and you'll see on your sheet is something called a primary care package. That's what I would call sort of a minimum medical benefit package. And what that would provide would be outpatient physician, nurse practitioner care, lab and x-ray, to basically diagnostic services to allow physicians to diagnose and treat illness appropriately, prescription drugs, which would give the ability to treat a number of things and prevent, either cure things or prevent complications, such as giving, as we talked about the other day, the ability to provide insulin for diabetics so they actually don't get sicker, to be able to give people high blood pressure medicine, medicines for their asthma. And then mental health and chemical dependency treatment. Because we also, as we discussed the other day, that mental illness and substance abuse problems are unfortunately a big issue for many of the people on the Oregon Health Plan. That's actually why many people are poor, is because of ongoing illnesses. So that primary care package could, in essence, become a base package for the folks in blue that you could build upon and prioritize upon. And that once again, in the spirit of Connie and Mike from previously, is a suggestion and just a place to start in terms of when we look at medical services, starting with what would be in essence the most basic and moving up from there.
Okay.
Let me stop there for a moment and see if there are any questions.
Are there questions of Dr. Goldberg? In your description here that you just laid out in the benefits, the mandatory services, are those areas covered in the green?
Yes.
Up here in the boxes. The optional services are where?
The mandatory, it's mandatory that those in green get the mandatory services.
Okay.
The optional services can then be laid on top of that group as well. In other words, as you can see, the mandatory Medicaid benefit package does not include prescription drugs.
So it would be an overlay to the green.
Yes. But there is not a state in the union that does not include prescription drugs as part of their categorical Medicaid program for reasons that we've discussed as medications as being a necessary part of medical care.
Okay. And then the primary care package would go on top of that overlay?
Actually, the primary care package would... The folks in green would have that package and much more. The folks in green, if you gave them the mandatory services as well as what's budgeted in the co-chair's budget, if they had the mandatory package as well as drugs, mental health, and chemical dependency, they would, in essence, have everything in the primary care package plus the hospital care. And that's what's budgeted for the folks in green. Those individuals in blue, you could start with a primary care package and then add services onto there.
Okay.
Dental, hospital care, et cetera, much in the same way previously you were prioritizing populations. This would be about prioritizing a benefit package.
Okay. Senator Brown?
Okay, thank you. I guess, Dr. Gorber, I'm needing some sort of examples. And let's say we've got a pregnant woman who's like at 150% of the poverty level, so she's in blue. Let's say she has an infection, a tooth infection that's infecting her bloodstream and may have an impact on the fetus. What happens if she is under the mandatory or she is under the primary care package? What happens in that circumstance?
I actually wouldn't recommend the primary care package for pregnant women. What I had alluded to was that actually for pregnant women and children, we would want to provide a full package. Clearly for pregnant women, it wouldn't just be treating infections, but it would be hospital care is an important piece of delivering babies.
But there's no part, Mr.
Chairman. Yes.
I think what I was getting to is that it specifically provides in the mandatory service vision and dental for children, but not for pregnant women.
That's correct.
So you would only have emergency care, dental for pregnant women?
Currently, that wouldn't just be for pregnant women, whether they be at 150 or at 50% of poverty. The mandatory package would not include vision and dental. And should a pregnant woman have an emergency dental need, such as an infected tooth, that actually could get cared for in a hospital in an emergency room. I think the real issue is that a tooth that had yet become infected to the point that someone had infection in their blood could get treated earlier in an outpatient setting if they had a dental benefit.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Wouldn't it have been a heck of a lot cheaper to treat them in the outpatient clinic than in the emergency clinic?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Doctor,
the mandatory services is a federal mandate, not a state mandate.
Okay. Doctor, the sheet that Mike Benetto gave us, would this help us if we were looking off this as you were...
I think that's what we're going to move to next.
Okay.
Okay.
But I believe that what Senator Brown is getting to in terms of principles of prioritizing benefits is really looking at prioritizing, you want to provide those benefits which are going to, A, prevent future illness, prevent further cost share to our society, and that will take care of people's most pressing and immediate needs. I mean, there are certain principles that you'd want to consider in prioritizing.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Questions for anybody? Senator Carter?
I don't have a question, but would you put the little boy on the far left next to you so you can have some control over him? He's out of control.
Who?
The little boy on your left next to Mark.
No, he's an old codger.
He's out of control, whomever he is.
Well, he's approaching retirement age, and
that's why I call him a little boy, because they said they returned to.
Careful how you say little boy, because he and I are the same age.
Uh-oh.
If you want to continue, Doctor.
So there, Mike, would you like me to continue, or do you want to
pick up there? Thanks, Bruce. This, the next sheet that you have in front of you, I think I do need to preface that this is an example. This is not necessarily set in stone. This is just to as a starting point. I should point out that, Bruce, can I have that? Thanks. Under the first piece, this benefit prioritization worksheet, under the categoricals, Dr. Goldberg just laid out what is in the mandatory benefits. In what we have put down as a basic benefit package, we have put mandatory benefits, prescription drugs, mental health, and chemical dependency. We have put that up there because that has been the package that has basically been agreed upon through a number of stakeholder groups, Representative Westland, Representative Bates, and Representative Cruz, that they have initiated and gotten feedback from a number of stakeholders and said, this really is the baseline of where we should be starting from.
Is this also the baseline prior to the budget reductions that were made? In other words, is this baseline, was this the pre-existing baseline, or is this a recreated new baseline?
Mr. Chair, this is a recreated new baseline that much of the new budget has been based on this new baseline, all the new numbers.
So the co-chair's budget encompasses this baseline or this floor?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Without any of these add-backs?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. So that is the question you might have for the categorical population. How would you prioritize those benefits for that particular population?
I see. Okay.
Chair?
Representative Bates?
Just so maybe we can make this clearer for people. And again, you guys did a great job in doing this the way you laid it out. It makes it very understandable. I'll go back to Senator Brown's example because sometimes it's a good way to look at things. Pregnant woman, abscess tooth, bacteria in the bloodstream from that tooth, goes to the hospital, 3 or 4 days, IV antibiotics, gets treated, tooth still isn't pulled, goes back out, comes back in 3 weeks later, same scenario all over again. It's hard to start cutting benefits out without having unintended consequences later on down the line. Dental used to be into this group for that very reason. And that's a rare occurrence. There's a lot of dental work that goes on that isn't absolutely necessary, but emergent dental care is. And I think your example of it was very illuminating for most of us because it makes it real. And so when you look at these benefit packages, look for unintended consequences, but at the same time, you have to be reasonable in what we can afford and can't afford.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Menace.
Dr. Bates raised an interesting point, though. Do we have to look at dental as if it's one single box of particular benefits, or could it be something derived from an emergency room visit that a physician recognizes the problem and authorizes that the emergency dental care be accomplished? It would make sense to me.
Actually, Senator Minnis, there's been a lot of work over the last year or so about having tailoring a dental benefit, and there have been a number of proposals from the dental care organizations about how you could or could not, in essence, prioritize services even within a dental benefit of having certain treatments and not others. So, yes, that is certainly something that could be done.
Mr. Chair, just
a moment. Senator, are you finished?
Well, I think I am. I mean, I guess maybe I'm talking about where a physician recognizes that there's a clear problem that's going to be exacerbated if there's not an intervention by a dentist who's a different practitioner. Then it seems like my keen sense for the obvious is it ought to be covered. I don't know how you define that. And I don't know that we want to get into a larger discussion about, you know, defining a specific dental benefit package that's, I mean, I think we're really talking about someone whose physical health is going to deteriorate if they don't have access to the right kind of practitioner.
Right. Representative Cruz?
Just a question to Dr. Goldberg. Wouldn't Representative Bates' scenario be covered in the dental services that are above 519?
I'm not certain that the office-based extraction would be. The emergency care would.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. Under some criteria, it could be, I think. So, you know, I think the first thing we look at is the dental services that are above the new line and see how comprehensive that is. And to be quite honest, Mr. Chair, I've got the book and I can read then, and then it's got all these numbers and I get lost in those. So it'd be nice to have a clearer definition of what is in the dental piece that's above 519.
If we could have you research that and maybe come back. If we could move on, I'd like to keep us on a fairly tight rein here this afternoon because we are on a time frame to get through the introduction to the prioritization of benefits. So Dr. Goldberg or Mike?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Second piece, pregnant women. Same benefit package, same issues that we will come back and we'll be able to give you some more specifics on how many dental pieces fall into those lines that we were just talking about. Children are a little bit different. When we start talking about the CHIP population, we bring in dental as a mandatory benefit that gets included. So that's one piece that actually we do cost into this calculation. The big piece that we've been discussing as far as how we're going to cover adults, couples, and families, you know, can you reduce the benefit package and what would that benefit package look like? What we have put up here as a basic benefit package is a primary care package, and that's what Dr. Goldberg just went through, having physician services, lab x-ray, prescription drugs, mental health, and chemical dependency. Big one not being there would be hospital. So over here you would be able to prioritize, and how would you want to add back hospital, dental, and optional?
Senator Winters?
Durable medical is also in that category, is it not?
Yeah. Durable medical is also in that category. However, it's not in, it is included in the mandatory. Correct. So this is certainly one of the bigger issues, I think, for the committee to decide of how they would want to prioritize that benefit package. Last one, and I really hate to even go there right now, but the last one actually is the medically needy. And this one, again, is a basic benefit package we just put up there as a prescription drug program, and we would be able to have some specific add-backs or wraparound packages that would be included on top of that. Again, it is going to depend on the population that we're looking at, depending on what that price is going to be. And we will...
Back to the adults, couples, and families, the primary care services. Right now, it's my understanding these adults do not have drug and alcohol and mental health. Is that correct?
That's
Chair,
correct.
Follow-up?
Yes.
So... for adult parents who are involved in our juvenile dependency system, their children are removed, for example, for failure to care for the children because of drug and alcohol or mental health. The state is required to make reasonable efforts to reunite the parents with the children. if we are not providing mental health and drug and alcohol to those parents, how are we meeting the reasonable efforts test? And if we don't provide that in the future, how are we going to continue to get federal funds under the federal legislation that requires us to do so?
You were reaching. Go ahead.
Yes, Judy.
Senator Hand and Senator Brown, under the scenario that Mr. Bonetto presented, there would be a mental health and chemical dependency package. But you are right. Currently, in the package that the standard population is receiving today, they are not receiving a mental health or chemical dependency benefit.
Are you finished?
I'm finished.
Okay. Senator Winters.
But there's also provisions made with inside that agency's budget, supposedly, to access some A&D and chemical dependency treatment. But you are correct. I've raised this with the agency that we have responsibility, and they're not always in the position, for budgetary reasons and others, to get the treatment that's needed for the clients that you're talking about.
Okay, further questions? Representative Bates?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. This is only a suggestion down here. Thank you again for doing a great job, Mike. When you cut hospital out of adults and couples and families, you talk about basically what we commonly refer to as the Utah plan, which they've done in Utah. Understand this is a cost shift. Those hospitals will still be picking those patients up. They'll have the cost of those patients, and those patients' costs will be reflected in higher costs for the hospital to pass on to the commercial market, and we all end up paying the premium on that without the benefit of the federal match money. So let's make sure we keep connecting the dots all the way through these options so we really know what we're doing in healthcare in the state. We don't miss that important point. You drop the hospitals out, they've got to cost shift it, we all end up paying for it in higher commercial rates, and we don't get a federal match to deal with it.
Dr. Goldberg?
Senator Hannon, Representative Bates, I mean, you're absolutely right. There would be a cost shift, and without, if you don't include a hospital benefit, those costs will be shifted. I think the reason to begin with outpatient medical care is to begin with a prioritization somewhere, that by providing outpatient care and drugs, you will still prevent some hospitalizations from occurring. And it seemed that if we were not going to if we had to prioritize to start here and build up, as opposed to starting with a hospital benefit without providing the sort of outpatient care and drugs that would keep people out of the hospital, was would be a different way of doing it, if you wanted to.
Mr. Chair, I'm not even suggesting that, obviously. The way you prioritize is appropriate. I'm just trying to point out, when you lop pieces out, you have unintended consequences you must keep in your mind as you make those decisions.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Senator Menace.
Mr. Chair, just in argument with Dr. Bates, I guess I would suggest that that's pretty much undocumented nonsense. And I'll say this, it's a philosophical discussion, a theoretical discussion about cost shift, but when we shifted and created the health plan to begin with, we had this huge argument that somehow there were going to be these reductions in premiums and we're going to save money, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I've never seen any statistical analysis or study that has shown that private payer insurance has been reduced by the creation of the Oregon Health Plan as it existed in the early 90s and through this last 10 years or so. In fact, medical inflation is higher than it's ever been. So it's nice to talk about it. It makes good discussion in an academic classroom, but I think it's a bunch of nonsense. In fact, I think from my theoretical perspective, a lot of hospitals, in fact, are nonprofits, and their central mission and the justification for the nonprofit status happens to be the fact that they do care to individuals who cannot pay. And in fact, the justification for their nonprofit status is embroiled in the fact that they do it. So compensated care, I mean, it's nice, and you'd like to pay everybody, and you'd like to pay everybody well. But frankly, I think if this cost shift, if it exists, really brings the hospitals back to where they should be. And that's doing uncompensated care as a nonprofit.
Okay. Representative Cruz.
Thank you. We've been talking about the Utah model for basically all session, and at one point we renamed it the Courtney model, and the senator didn't like that, so we're still searching for a name. we've never really done a full a full look at it. We've just assumed the benefit package and kind of moved forward with that. I was at a meeting in Boston a few weeks ago with a legislator from Utah, and she was kind of, in 15 minutes, was kind of trying to walk me through this thing. And I think it might be beneficial, if we want to go down a reduced benefit model, to look at how they crafted theirs. Clearly, it's for their expansion population, but in the fact that they excluded inpatient, they also put a cap on the amount of charity care that the hospitals would do, and the state assumed risk on the top side of that. So it'd be kind of interesting to see the full dynamic and see what it would look like in total if we can get that sort of information.
Okay.
Would it be possible, Mike, to maybe put some of these numbers together and so we can see what it looks like? Also, I wanted to ask you, the prioritization of benefits, are you going to take these lists back and start putting some dollar values on these prioritizations and bring it back to us with options that we can use as buybacks to include, in addition to the prioritization benefits that we just adopted earlier? And so these pieces start to come together. Is this what this is, the next logical step from this point?
Mr. Chair, that's absolutely right. And that's what we will have for you tomorrow.
Okay.
With the one caveat on medically needy, that we will do our best to get that priced.
Senator President Courtney has indicated his preference is never to hear the word again, medically needy, today. So, just a word of caution. Senator Menace.
I apologize, I had another committee. I want to make sure that I'm tracking. You've gone through and done the prioritization.
We did the prioritization of populations.
But has the committee actually determined a benefit package yet? Because I think isn't that integral to the discussion of the question that was just asked? But wouldn't it be appropriate for us to decide, at least as a base level, what we think these packages should be, and then cost it out, and then talk about what we can or cannot do?
I think what Mr. Bonetto was going to do tomorrow was bring back those figures for us to consider and discuss as an open committee, and then let us pick from the menu, so to speak, and say what portions of that do you want to go in under the umbrella.
If I could, I'd like to argue with you just a little bit.
You can argue away.
It would almost be better, in my view, to go ahead and pick the benefit packages absent the cost. In the abstract, to suggest that this is what, in these category groups, this is the pregnant women, these are the things we think ought to be covered. And then look at the cost, and we can go, oh my goodness, we can't do that. Or
I guess I would take the exception that, because it's like going into a car lot and say, I want a pink Cadillac and I want all the buzzes and whistles on there, and then you come back and show me the price and then you faint.
That's when you go to the Chevrolet lot.
Yeah, well, we don't have that kind of time, quite frankly. We're under a kind of a time constraint here. I would rather Mr. Bonetto go back and bring back to the committee a menu of what our options are. Now, maybe if I misunderstood, this was what we had discussed at our meeting day before yesterday. Now, I'm here to be corrected if the committee has a different opinion.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Mr. Chairman, I'm at your service.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I make a recommendation that when we
Senator Winters,
when the staff goes back and price the basic benefit packages, that when they do the mandatory services and those optional services that are under there, that you price those out as well, so that there's a clear picture of what that looks like. You have, like, for example, prescription drugs that isn't in the mandatory, that is in there, but underneath that you also have, oh, I'm sorry, I'll back up. I will not go any further. It's already in there. just wanted to make
thank
sure
you.
That
you had me scared there.
Mental health and chemical dependency was a part of that group.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Senator Menace, just to make sure we're clear, I guess I can move forward with where we're at right now as long as there is some consensus on this basic benefit package. If I can take that with the populations that we've agreed upon and start pricing it out with those incremental add-backs, and then the committee can have further discussion on that.
So moved.
Senator Menace, you make life so easy for me. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do have another question.
Yes, Senator Menace.
And I know, hopefully it's not too complex. It could just be flat out stupid. But can you bring back, or is it possible to bring back a set of assumptions behind the cost figures? For instance, when we talk about prescription drugs, if we can identify what the assumptions are behind those costs, hospitalization, what the assumptions are behind the cost, because I do think that's integral to the construct of each of the various benefit sections, if you will, almost back to the discussion we had about dental a little earlier.
The only question I have as a follow-up to that, if Dr. Bates was one attending physician and Dr. Goldberg were another attending physician, would they both come out with the same equation?
A lot better than if they were lawyers. Be a lot closer.
No, that's the only point I raise, that it's hard to say one size fits all categories.
I guess that's what I'm saying too, actually.
Senator
Brown? I just want to clarify, as I heard what you said, Mike, is that you were going to price the basic benefit package, and I'm wondering if that meant the dental pieces were going to be pricing. I wanted to make sure that we would have some options available to us in the dental arena, since some of us see that as a part of health care.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, yes, those will be priced out as well, those additional add-backs.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, is there further questions? If not, we look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. And I want to remind the committee members, we are meeting from 4 to 6 p.m. tomorrow. And the committee is also scheduled to meet next week, Wednesday and Thursday, from 3 to 6 p.m. And also next Saturday, from 9:30 a.m. till 12 noon. So if you would all put that on your agendas, we would greatly appreciate it. And if there's no other business to come before us today, we're adjourned for the day.
Thank you.